in Germany, someone said nine. Once in Germany, someone said nine.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Kellerman, the Jean Monnet Chair and Director of the Center for European Studies and a Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University. He's the author of Eurolegalism, the Transformation of Law and Regulation in the European Union, and The Rules of Federalism, Institutions and Regulatory Politics in the EU and Beyond. He serves on the editorial boards of the Journal of European Public Policy and West European Politics, and is a former member of the Executive Committee of the European Union Studies Association. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Kellerman.
Thanks for having me.
And the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban appeared before a very skeptical European Parliament defending his efforts to change the laws in regard to Hungarian Central Bank and the judiciary. And of course, prior to this, he had a pretty rough time before the European Parliament over his efforts to take over the press, or at least create new press rules. Where does this stand in terms of a perception or reality vis-a-vis Hungary's drift to the right?
Well, I think the reality is, in fact, very worrying. Orbán's party, Fidesz, has a more than two-thirds majority in the parliament, which is the majority necessary to change the constitution, and that's what they did. They wrote a new constitution for themselves that entrenches their power. They've also passed well over 300 laws since coming into power last year, many of which have taken the form of what they call cardinal laws, which are laws that can only be changed by a two-thirds majority. So, you know, therefore, they're entrenching the policies they want for the future, and they're also changing the institutions of Hungarian democracy and eliminating the independence of independent institutions like the central bank, the Supreme Court, in a way that's very worrying. We see a real consolidation of power in Orban's hands.
And just before we get to the judiciary and the bank issues that Orban was under fire for before the European Parliament, what happened over his efforts to control the press?
Well, what happened there was this was one of the earlier laws he had enacted even before this new constitution came into effect. He introduced a media law that put in place a host of changes, among which was a new media regulator that was going to be an appointee of his, so a party loyalist of his, that had enormous powers, both over the allocation of sort of the spectrum, so to speak, so you know, licensing of stations and de-licensing of stations, and various other restrictions where people can submit complaints about biased coverage and that sort of thing by media organizations, and then this regulator has the power to impose very large sanctions on them. So that obviously has a big chilling effect potentially. So the outcome of that essentially was that the EU last year identified a few of the what they saw as the most problematic elements of the media law, where it really ran afoul of EU laws and regulations. Orban, despite initially saying he wouldn't change a thing, he did back down, made a few changes to come into compliance with what the EU asked, but I'd say he hasn't come into compliance with the spirit of their demands. And so, in fact, just an example of this is just recently, in the last couple weeks, it was the media regulator denied the license to one of what is viewed in Hungary as the last really independent, critical voices in radio. This radio station was denied a renewal for no apparent reason.
Well, apparently, Orban's trying to dismiss all this as technical complaints, but many European parliamentarians say, no, it goes much further. And the EU Commission President, José Manuel Barroso, said that beyond the legal aspects, some concerns have been expressed regarding the quality of democracy in Hungary, its political culture, the relations between government and opposition, and between the state and civil society. So that's pretty much putting him on notice, isn't it?
It sure is. And I think the challenge the EU has is that the way the EU deals with countries who violate EU laws and norms you know, generally is a very legalistic way, right? You have this variety of legal proceedings, but you know, essentially the European Commission, which is the executive arm, can bring a legal action against a member state for violating EU law, and it all gets very technical and legalistic. And that's part of what the Commission has announced today, is that it was launching what they call these infringement proceedings or these legal proceedings against Hungary on three specific issues, having to do with the central bank, having to do with retirement ages of judges, which were changed, and the other one having to do with the data protection authority. But as you said, beyond that, what Barroso, the president of the Commission, said in this statement was, look, we want to think, you know, beyond this, you know, legal detailed stuff, that there is an erosion of democracy. Now, the EU isn't very used to dealing with undemocratic member states, right? So this is a real challenge. There is more they could do. Some of the members of the European Parliament on the left, from the Green parties and the Socialist parties, are calling for the EU to potentially suspend Hungary's voting rights under another provision of the EU treaties, you know, that requires member states to maintain democracy and that sort of thing, EU norms concerning human rights, those sort of things. So, you know, potentially, if this does keep going and the conflict keeps escalating, you could see even stronger sanctions against Hungary.
Again, I'm speaking with Daniel Kellerman, who's the Jean Monnet Chair and Director of the Center for European Studies and a Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University. He serves on the editorial boards of the Journal of European Public Policy and West European Politics, and is a former member of the Executive Committee of the European Union Studies Association. And we're talking about the drift to right in Hungary and the extent to which the European Parliament are calling the Hungary's Prime Minister, Viktor Orbán, out on this. Of course, the Europeans have considerable leverage, don't they, because of Hungary's extraordinary debt. I believe it's something like 80% of GDP, isn't it? And a lot of that money is owed to Austrian banks, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is. Hungary right now is in the midst of these negotiations with the IMF, and the IMF has made it clear that it's not going to do anything to help them until it gets a kind of stamp of approval from the EU. So this, in addition to the normal sort of legal tools and threats that the EU can make against states that are violating laws, in this case they have this enormous leverage because Hungary is having a very hard time going to, you know, borrowing on international markets. Their bonds are, you know, facing very high yields, and so that gives the EU great leverage. Yeah.
And they're asking, Hungary's asking for a standby loan from the IMF of 20 billion euros.
Yeah, essentially they're looking forward, thinking they may need a sort of another bailout package, but in the meantime they want a sort of immediate standby loan that will enable them to go to the to the international markets to borrow. But even that is sort of on hold pending, you know, resolution of these tensions with the EU. In particular, from the IMF's perspective, their main concern is with the issues surrounding the independence of the central bank, right? But more broadly, the drift toward authoritarianism in Hungary, I think, has everyone worried about what that's going to mean for the economy going forward.
So what is going on then with the data protection authority that the European Union are concerned that this new Hungarian government is trying to take charge of? What does that mean? It sounds a little Orwellian.
Well, yeah, first I have to say, of the, you know, the different policies, this is one of the ones that I don't know as much about, so I should just say that first. But essentially what it boils down to is that the Hungarian government has given itself, in the view of the EU, sort of too much power to monitor people's data, you know, in the form of telecommunications, internet, that sort of thing. But more generally, what we see across all these areas, like the earlier conflict last year about the media regulator, now the data protection regulator, the central bank, is that you had a number of institutions, regulatory bodies, or the central bank in Hungary that were supposed to be independent to some extent, right? And in all those cases, what we've seen is that Fidesz is trying, that's Orban's party, is trying to extend its control such that it can put partisan affiliates of its in charge of these institutions and end their independence.
So let's go back a little, Daniel Kellerman, again, the Jean Monnet Chair and Director of the Center for European Studies and a Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University, to the predecessors, because there had to be a reason why Orban's Fidesz party won a two-thirds majority, giving it more power than any other Hungarian government had since the collapse of communism in 1989.
Yeah, well, what happened, there was a socialist government in place prior to that, and there was this huge scandal where there was a tape recording made, actually, of the socialist prime minister basically speaking to members of his government and saying, sort of admitting to them, well, we've been lying to the voters from morning till night, dawn till dusk, having to, and when he said lying, he was referring to not coming to terms or being honest with voters about the severity of the economic situation facing Hungary, the fact that they were piling up unsustainable levels of debt and that sort of thing. But anyway, when this recording was released, there was a huge firestorm about that. And, in addition, Hungary was having plenty of economic problems. But so in reaction to that, he stepped down. Then there was a caretaker government in place that actually did a lot and negotiated a loan with the IMF and made a lot of progress in Hungary. That was a government under Gordon Bainai. But he had pledged when he took over that he was only going to sort of act in a caretaker role and not stay beyond 1 year, and he stuck to that pledge. And so then when the new election did happen, Fidesz really swept to power. But essentially what you have now, the situation in the wake of that, is that the left in Hungary is very divided, and there's no strong unified political force on the left. On the right, you have Fidesz, which is very dominant, and then further to the right of Fidesz, you have this sort of neo-fascist party called Jobbik, which is another big concern.
So, Daniel Kellerman, just leaking a private recording, of course, raises one's antenna about the secret police. What's the relationship with this government and the secret police, which, of course, pretty much ruled Hungary during the communist period, and then prior to, of course, the communist period, Hungary also had a fascist government.
Well, I honestly don't know much about that or the role of secret police, anything like that. I don't think that's the real heart of the issue or the problem right now in Hungary. I mean, more of what we see happening. I mean, there is some intimidation. For instance, around Christmas time, members of the opposition were stepped out of parliament as the Fidesz party was passing this slew of legislation, in particular when they were passing the new election law, which would perpetuate their power. And members of the opposition went outside of parliament and staged a very vocal protest. And a number of them were arrested temporarily or detained, not by secret police, but just by the regular police, because I guess they were violating rules about how close to parliament you could protest or something. But anyway, this, again, underlined people's fears, where you see members of the opposition being sort of rounded up. But they were all released shortly thereafter. But I think, just back to sort of what you were raising, the specter of what we need to fear here, I think the real danger in what we're seeing is that we have a party which it won through a legitimate, free, and fair election. I don't think there's any question there. But it managed to win this massive majority of seats in parliament, and it's now leveraging that to extend its power over as many aspects of the political system and society as it can, and to put in place reforms that will perpetuate its power for years and years to come.
Well, that's exactly what Putin did with United Russia in Russia.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a comparison, and it's a bit of an irony because Orban has always been very critical of Russia. He entered politics in the period of democratic sort of transition in Hungary, and even under communism, as someone who was critical of the then Soviet Union and calling for Hungarian independence, etc. So he has this strong anti-Russian background. But the irony then is that he's using techniques of Putin. He's sort of a Putin light. Or a mini Putin.
So when the former Belgian Prime Minister and the leader of the Franco-German Green Party, Daniel Cohn-Bendit, say to Mr. Orban before the European Parliament that many Hungarians, and this is what Cohn-Bendit said, many Hungarians, including Jews and other minorities, are afraid because of Fidesz's policy, and minorities have a right not to live in fear. Because I had to get a little clarity on this. I heard a BBC report about how a lot of young Hungarians are emigrating, that gays are being beaten up on the street, and that gypsies are by these sort of gangs of thugs that seem empowered by the government and the move to the right.
Well, yeah, I think there is a political climate that's developing, and that's not just from Fidesz or Orban's party, but as I said, there's this Jobbik party, this sort of far-right neo-fascist party that has a lot of support. So there's a political climate that is hostile to all those kind of groups you mentioned. And even in the new constitution that Fidesz passed, you know, it has a lot of sort of language, you know, for instance, on marriage. It has language on that. It, you know, doesn't include protections for people against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, things like that. So the whole tone that he is fostering is one that I could see creating fear amongst those vulnerable minority groups. And, I mean, another area where that comes up, something you haven't mentioned yet, was the law on religion, which has been another big controversy where Fidesz passed a law on religious organizations, basically saying that there were some 300-some-odd registered religious organizations in Hungary previously, and they've reduced that initially to 14 religious denominations that are recognized by the Hungarian government and given an official status, and then they've told other religious denominations or religions that they need to apply to Hungary, the Hungarian government, and to meet certain criteria in order to be recognized as an official religious organization. And that obviously has important implications in terms of your tax status, you know, in terms of just your existence as a sort of legal entity. And, I mean, this includes, you know, things like Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims. None of those are now among the 14 officially registered religions, so they all have to sort of apply to be recognized.
Well, just in closing, perhaps changing the subject somewhat, but still connected, and that is that there's a lot of distress in Europe over the euro, and the inability appears to be an extraordinary long time inability on the part of the European authorities to get their hands around the euro crisis. There's a fear on the part of some people that if there's a crash of the euro, then you will have more right-wing parties. Echoes of Weimar Germany. Is there any? Do you have any idea of why it is that the Europeans haven't been able to get their hands on this euro crisis?
Let me say a couple things about that. I mean, first, in the context of this broader crisis and just connecting it with what's going on in Hungary, one thing I would say to start out is, you know, although it's been incredibly frustrating how long it's taken European leaders to address the crisis, how they've done it in a piecemeal fashion where each step has been inadequate and they've had to go back again and again to the drawing board. So it's been very frustrating. That being said, I think the conflict with Hungary sort of reminds us of one of the many reasons why we should be lucky we have the EU as an organization in Europe, that although the EU has trouble dealing with a government like Hungary, at least it's there to try to rein in, you know, the excesses of a government like Orbán's.
Well, just in the last minute, do you think it's the euro is going to survive, and the EU that you're a student of, is it going to survive?
Yes, I think both the EU and the euro will survive. I think they've been declared dead or nearly dead before many times, the EU has, only to disappoint, you know, the skeptics. And with the euro, I would say it's not totally impossible that a state, let's say Greece, would leave. I don't think they will leave the euro, but it's not impossible. But the idea that the entire euro currency would collapse, cease to exist, that I think is completely impossible. And we've got to remember this is the second reserve currency in the world after the dollar. the EU, the Eurozone, the second largest economy in the world after the U.S., if you treat it as a collective entity. So, you know, the EU is too big to fail.
Well, on that note, I thank you for joining us, Daniel Kellerman.
All right, thanks very much for having me. My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Kellerman, the Jean Monnet Chair and Director of the Center for European Studies and a Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University. He's the author of Eurolegalism, the Transformation of Law and Regulation in the European Union, and The Rules of Federalism, Institutions and Regulatory Policies in the EU and Beyond. He serves on the editorial boards of the Journal of European Public Policy and West European Politics and is a former member of the Executive Committee of the European Union Studies Association. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about Mitt Romney's problems with his taxes.
All that diamond dust, blowing up your hopes, flamboyant obstacles, deals made to cope, ideas in decline, rise of the loss, yeah. Hey, here we stand, slave to networks, master plans, swags the brand, open a can, chains off still, y'all never ran, but